You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I'm Jamie Dumont.
I'm Rob Russo.
I'm Jennifer Simard.
And this is
The Fabulous Invalid.
Hi. Oh, hey. I've been saying hi, guys, on the show like every week.
Oh, really?
And, you know, I'm the one who made this big announcement that we shouldn't be saying hi, guys, because
You've said this before.
Gendered.
Right? Haven't we talked about this?
We have talked about this. A friend of mine told me to stop saying that because it made her feel less like identified or marginalized. And it got me thinking because I don't think of hey guys as being that. But then she sent me this really interesting article and we had a conversation about it. And I was like, oh, you know what? I hear what you're saying. So I'm going to start over and I'm going to say, hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
What's going on?
I have so many things.
So many things.
So many things.
Where to begin? I don't know. Jennifer, you had something you wanted to bring up, I thought.
Oh, well, I read that. It's a little last week or a few weeks ago now, but that there was that article in the New York Times about those two charming gentlemen who left the Javits Center when it looked like the tide was turning during the election in 2016 and literally ran across town to the Trump party. And I read the whole article, but that part was, to me, the most telling because it signaled to me a lack of actual, in my opinion, a lack of actual vision and values. It seemed very very much like a mercenary. It seemed like what Kellyanne Conway does, like I'm going to sell out my services to the highest bidder. And I thought it was...
Seems a little like what Trump does, too, quite
I don't
frankly.
Know, but I just thought, wait a minute. You just want to be attached to a winner? Is that that's your value system?
Right.
I didn't read the article too carefully.
What are their names? What are their
Bill White and Brian Urie.
Okay.
Did they give a reason for why they jumped ship so quickly?
Oh, I forget the exact phrase in the article, but it was like, this was just so like sad and pathetic, so we wanted to go over and to the other party, you know?
And they're a couple, correct?
Couple, yes.
A gay couple.
Mm-hmm.
What?
And one of them...
I don't understand.
Wrap your head around that. Yeah, I know.
I don't understand the gay Republican.
But one of them was Republican.
Yes, that was the other misleading thing about the headline of the article. It was like, you know, two liberal activists, you know, become the biggest Trump supporters in New York City, when in reality, half the couple is like a staunch conservative Republican.
Gay Republican who was that when he walked in... Yeah. To the Hillary rally, right? Yeah. He was supporting Hillary, correct?
Yes.
So that's also dubious, right? So he just sort of, was he supporting Hillary for the, I want to elect the first woman president, or?
Right. Yeah. Well, to Jennifer's point, it seems like their whole thing was just a social status thing, right? Like, they love being in the room with powerful people. So it doesn't matter to them what the actual, you know, substance of the policy might be, but just, we want to be with Trump because he won.
Well, they're scumbags.
Yeah.
Well, I just wish them a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
That's right. Yeah.
I'd really like to brunch with them.
Yeah. Well, I will say...
I'd like a nice brunch.
I just saw Carolina Change, which is one of my favorite musicals, in London. And the cathartic number in that show is called Lot's Wife. If you've never listened to it, listen to it. But the final line of it is, "Don't let my sorrow make evil of me." And that line struck me like it never has before, sitting in the theater. Mm. And so, you know what? Merry Christmas to Bill and Brian, because I'm not going to let my sorrow, my anger make evil of me, and I'll let what they do speak for itself.
Love it.
Bill and Brian are their names?
Mm-hmm.
They can go fuck themselves.
There you go.
Merry fucking Christmas.
Merry fucking Christmas. This week, we are joined by Bonnie Milligan, who is currently making her Broadway debut as Princess Pamela in Head Over Heels, a role that she created at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in 2015 and repeated at San Francisco's Curran Theater last summer. A graduate of The Ohio State University and a veteran of Off-Broadway, the Kinky Boots National Tour, and New York's vibrant cabaret scene, we are delighted to welcome Belting Bonds to the Fabulous Invalid.
Thank you for
Hi.
Having me.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hi, Bonnie.
I'm good.
Hello.
For coming down. Before we get started with the hard-hitting questions, we usually ask some sort of, I always say, and I say this every single time that I say this, we ask some silly questions, but they're not really that silly, so I don't know why I say that. But what relaxes you? What do you do to chill?
Oh, I mean, it depends on the day, but I kind of like a good, like a Netflix moment or like a Beat Bobby Flay on Food Network, you know, kind of a, you don't have to think about it kind of a show situation.
Oh, have you just binged watched any series on Netflix, for example?
I've been doing, well, I've been doing season two of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Don't you love it?
Yes.
Don't you want to guest star?
Yes.
With me?
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Wait, who do we pitch this to?
I'm like, I don't know. But
hey there, listeners, we're available. Thank you.
We scream 1950s.
We scream. Amen. Exactly.
Well, this is sort of like that, but what do you do to recharge your battery? I think you might have just answered it by saying streaming, but
yeah, I mean, I like quiet time, just kind of coming home, lighting a few candles. I have like those little fairy copper lights that, you know, get on Amazon or whatever. I put them up for Christmas last year, and then I never took them down because it's giving you like a cute mood lighting moment as opposed to the giant like fan on the ceiling. And I just sort of wind down and quiet and relax.
Resting that gift of yours, your beautiful voice.
Thank you.
But candles, I always say to people, little tea lights, it's the cheapest, most luxurious thing you can do for yourself to change the mood, you know, and calm yourself down.
Yeah.
Yeah, scented candle. I'm a big scented candle fella. Like, I will travel with a small little one even because I just, it's something about how scented candle just makes me feel like the world is okay.
Bonnie, what's the best piece of advice you've been given?
The best piece of advice I've been given. One of them I remember was like, I mean, it sounds kind of harsh, but I took from it what I could, was there's always going to be someone just as talented as you, if not more, but there are few people that can outwork you. And so to me, I took that as like, stay humble and work hard and like be a good person. Because people don't want to work with jerks. So that's one thing I kind of like always took in, was just like, know what you're good at, don't get too big of a head on your shoulders, and just work really hard.
Speaking of one of the most humble, beautiful people we both know, can we just talk for a second about Rachel York and how much we love her?
I love her so much.
I know you do. You're dressing roommates, right?
And
we did Disaster together.
Yes.
I don't know if people know, she's, for someone who's so glamorous and truly so renowned and talented, she has to be truly my top three nicest people I've ever worked with.
No, really.
Correct.
Honestly.
Yeah.
She's so really nice, special. So kind, is like so welcoming to everybody right off the bat, and is just like, she does not have an ego in the room, and she's brilliant. I mean, she's Rachel York. Come on.
And you get to be roomies, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I love
spent,
that.
Like, Thanksgiving together. Like, pal.
I know. And you had like a facial mask disaster.
We did.
Can you tell us about that?
Well, we put on, you know, those little masks that you get, you know, at the dollar store or something, that, you know,
like the peel and stick.
The little peel and stick. Yeah, exactly. And then she was like, we should also try this like charcoal toothpaste for teeth whitening. I was like, great. And we did it like after we put the masks on. So it was a mess. She just had like charcoal all over the mouth, and we just could not stop
laughing. You looked like Death Eaters.
We looked like Death Eaters. Like, we were eating souls.
Charcoal yeah. toothpaste seems counterintuitive. Like, it seems like it would do the opposite of what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, I don't know that I saw a lot of results, but maybe you're supposed to, like, use them a lot. So
you know what?
Like, cool.
I'm a teeth whitening failure, so I did the whole thing where you know, you put the, you know, you go to the dentist and they do the yeah. things and yeah. you can't eat anything but white colored food, which yeah. is horrible for 3 days. Ugh. And it's not that it didn't work. I couldn't personally see a difference.
Yeah.
I thought it was such a waste of time and energy. But yes. I'm also not an actor, and I don't, you know, nobody cares if my teeth are yellow.
There you go.
True.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, on that
note, yeah.
Good transition, right? Well, getting into more of the serious sort of substantive stuff. You obviously are noted, celebrated for your incredible voice. So I have to ask, starting, yeah. you know, from there, when did you discover your voice? Or was singing a part of your childhood? How did it come
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I was always a singer. My parents met when my dad was the new lead singer of the Southern gospel group my mom was the pianist for. That tells you a lot right
yeah.
there. And so my dad was a preacher. And when I grew up, I... basically sang as soon as I could talk, and they put me up in front of the church. And I have a brother who's 5 years older, and he has a great voice, but it was never for him. He was always like, whatever. And I was immediately like, yes. I remember, like, I was 5 years old, and I got to sing the verses of the song that my family, like, came in on the choruses, and I was like, this feels right.
Yeah. Remember what song?
It was something like, "Don't You Be Doing That Church Hop."
Wait, what a title. Wait. Pause.
Okay.
What kind of church is this?
Oh, Lord. Christian, but, like, we went to lots of different kinds of denominations. Like, my dad would, like, guest at, like, lots of... Which is funny because we were essentially doing a church hop.
literally like, the
don't
song.
Don't you be doing that church hop. Like, I don't really know.
Ooh, that's great.
Can this be on your, like, debut solo album?
Yeah, right.
Maybe. Extra track.
Bonus yeah. track.
Where in the South
Bonus
is this?
Track.
What?
Where in the South is this?
Well, I mean, Central Illinois. It's the Midwest.
Oh, I'm an yeah. Illinois boy.
Decatur.
Oh, Winnetka, a little further north.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, everyone does that. Yeah.
No, just like farmland. Yeah. Like, I have a slight draw from where I'm from, and everybody's like, "Oh, you're from the South," and I'm like, "No, just I mean, kind of."
You go to the rural part of any state, and it's basically the South.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Upstate New York yeah. is the South. Right?
Well, okay. That's a whole other podcast.
That's a different podcast. I know.
Because why do some people from the South have thick Southern accents and some don't? Why do newscasters have no accent at all?
They've been told not to.
They're told not to. Yeah.
So. I thought they have, like, the Ohio standard. Isn't Ohio, like, the standard accent?
Parts of Ohio. But that's the thing, too, because I moved to Ohio when I was 16.
Right. There you go.
When my mom got remarried. And we went to Northwest Ohio, and my dad went to Detroit. And, like, I would go to my dad's, and I would come back and be like, I was at dad's, and I would have these strong A's, and I would talk like that. And then, like, and I remember, like, somebody in high school was like, "Alan, well, my name's Jazzy." And I was like, "Oh, Jazzy." And she's like, "No, that's gross. Not Jazzy. It's Jazzy." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So there's, like, strong accents in pockets of Ohio. But then I've been told, you know, maybe Central Ohio is that, like, the general kind
perfect
of
voice.
Standard American that they can teach you.
Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, sometimes it sounds, if you, like, really do it, it's like no one talks like that.
Right.
Though, like, a 30s movie
star. If you go to, like, Edith Skinner,
right.
let's yeah. do the IPA of the standard yeah. American. I was like, no, he talks like that.
I hear my accent when I'm tired. On my O's, my New England, you know, like yeah. like when you say the word, you know, confidence, I would, it comes out, you know, confidence.
Yeah,
I love that accent.
You do.
Oh my God. Yeah.
The New Hampshire accent yeah. is, like, I think the sharpest of the New England accents, right? The Massachusetts accent, like the quintessential one, is a little hard to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna get in trouble for this. But the New Hampshire one is and the Vermont one is a little muted, and Maine can be a little funky, but the New Hampshire one is, I think, the perfect New England accent. You just did it right there, too.
Well, it's tricky. There's a lot of French-Canadian in my family, and my husband said something today. I was like, oh, that's how my family sounds, where you add, like, an E-R-E to the end of open vowels, and it's interesting. Anyway.
You're from Manchester, right?
Yeah, I was born in Manchester.
Essentially.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah.
We digress.
Yeah, because this podcast is
sorry, this
me.
Is about Bonnie. Bonnie all we're doing is talking about ourselves.
Yeah, yes. Bonnie, could you step out? Thanks.
Tell me more. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
We'll be with you in a moment.
So you grew up singing, but you ended up studying drama, right, at school?
Yeah, it was acting focused. I grew up in a double-wide trailer, and so we just didn't have much money. And so when it came to schools, you know, just... I think it's interesting when you grow up without much, you like learn to put like the limitations on what you can do, and you think, well, I can't do that, and that's going to be debt, and I can't do this and this and this. Because some people, like now, I think, well, then you'll find a way. You can do loans, but like you don't think of that, right. You know, when you don't have much. And so Ohio State basically gave me like all my money, and I kind of begrudgingly went. I didn't want to go to a state school. They didn't want to, you know, I wanted to go be a musical theater actress. And so, but I'm really glad I ended up there because, you know, it was this liberal arts degree, the Big Ten school. And it was acting focused, and I kind of got to focus on, we did like Meisner and Stanislavski, and I had Shakespeare classes and, you know, a Tennessee Williams Chekhov class and like stuff like that, where you're like doing kind of everything, which was nice.
And I bet it pays dividends, right, in all your work that you do.
Yeah.
Like going
yeah.
back to that training and having that serious acting foundation.
Yeah, and they had a big emphasis in new works there, especially with their master's program, and they had 10 master's students working alongside, and I kind of developed as, you know, a new work creator, and this big emphasis on collaboration and being, you know, open in a room and playing. And I think that kind of was really, that was always there, but it was definitely strengthened at school, which was nice.
Well, I have to say, if I can fangirl for a minute.
Please.
I caught you in a performance of Jasper and Deadland.
Oh,
at the, it was a Prospect Theater, right? Yeah. Up on 86th Street. In 2014, and I remember, you know, looking in the program afterwards and being like, okay, looking at you, okay, Bonnie Milligan, she's going places, right? Like, she's going to be a big deal. And lo and behold,
aww.
4 years later, and, you know, a lot of work and dedication under your belt, you are headlining a Broadway show, which is pretty incredible. I wonder if you could share with us what it felt like making your Broadway debut.
You know, I've been with this show. We did the very first reading in May of 2014. Mm. So it's been a minute. And it's when you're with something that keeps almost happening and then not happening and then almost, it's a roller coaster. And it is such a role that it is like a breakout role for me that you're like, well, this, you know, when I started this, I did not have an agent and I wasn't even equity. And so this was something that wasn't for lack of auditioning or trying. Like, you know, I'm a different type. I'm tall and big. And a lot of people, if they want a big girl, they want her short and round and a very specific look. And I was always too tall to be Tracy Turnblad. And I don't get seen for a lot. And so I was always kind of typed out of the room before I got into the room. And then the rooms I would get into, I'm not like, I'm a good mover, but I'm not like the best dancer, so I can only keep up so long, and they'd only see me for ensemble, and then I couldn't keep up because like right. the dancers on Broadway are insanely beautiful and talented and all the things you want to be. So it was, that already was such a roller coaster of emotions of this thing that I had so much hopes and dreams built into that I thought, if it doesn't happen, it's not going to happen. And I, at this point, know that I'm put on this earth to do this. And if what is meant to be will be. And if it's not this, then it's got to be something else. And okay. And we'll have to deal with whatever comes my way and keep trying. When that curtain rose and that first audience, I had so many friends there. Were just, my heart was like, I thought it was going to pound out of my chest. And so many times...
You had the beat, literally.
Yeah, literally. I kept thinking, I need to be present. I need to take this in because they only get one first time ever. But then the minute I would try to take it in too much, I'd be like, I'm going to burst into tears. I can't. So I'd be like, okay. So I kind of like went back and forth of being like super present and like be present as Pamela Bonnie, not Bonnie, you know. And, you know, at the end of Beautiful, my first big number, the applause was so long and loud, and it brought tears to my eyes. I'm, like, holding my position, like, doing a little bit of, like, crying a little bit, but, like, okay, wipe, wipe, move on, like, being the scene. So it was thrilling and hard to breathe and amazing. then opening night was an opening night, you know, and you have the now the legacy robe ceremony, and there's Brian Stokes Mitchell, and I love Brian Stokes Mitchell, and I've gone and seen him at the top of Carnegie Hall in the cheapest seats possible, and saw him in Man of La Mancha when I visited the city with my mom, and went, I think he played, might have been Cafe Carlyle, and he was singing Love for Sale, and I accidentally rose my hand when he said, "Who will buy my love?" Like, that, you know, and I'm like, "I'm so sorry," like, "Oh, God." So he laughed at me from the stage. So, and there he is at the Legacy Robe Ceremony, and I'm just like, I couldn't stop crying. You know, it was just beautiful and special, and it took me a while to get here, so it does not go past me how special and wonderful that we get to do this.
So you've been along, you know, for the development of the show, like you said, for years. And, you know, Princess Pamela, I imagine, has been, you know, developed with you in the room, right? It's been sort of tailor-made for your talents, which is an incredible, you know, opportunity for you. And you know, you've already alluded to the fact that, you know, very often you're sort of not seen for things because of your body type.
Yeah.
And another thing I love about the show, which is all about celebrating, you know, self-love and identity, is that, you know, she is the most beautiful person in the land, right? And her size is not a punchline.
Mm-mm.
Her vanity is, right? You know, that's what makes the character funny, right?
Yeah.
This show in so many ways, whether it's, you know, for people who have, you know, a different gender identity or, you know, body type, it has meant so much to the audience.
Yes.
And you can tell that when you're sitting in the Hudson Theater, that there are people in the audience who this show really is cracking open their world of possibility of seeing representation on stage. What has it meant to you personally?
I feel the responsibility of it and, like, the joy of getting to be able to do that. You know, we at the stage door meet so many amazing souls of people that, like you said, feel identified in many different ways that they've never seen themselves represented, with tears in their eyes saying, "Thank you." And somebody saying, you know, "I never understood that. I thought I understood that representation matters, but I never got it until I actually just saw myself on stage."
You walk into the room and the temperature falls. The mood disappears, chased away by the gathering storm that is here. I look up, painted sky full of memories. And this house has no roof to shelter me. It's an automatic rainy day when I see you. It's the perfect consolation prize, a little piece of blue. It's an automatic rainy day. It's an automatic rainy day.
Some of these kids, they've come literally like 30 times. Peppermint has started writing how many times, like, "What number is this for you?" And she writes it on the top of the playbill. Oh, somebody's at like 33. Somebody's like, "I'm only at 24. And I'm just like,
only?
That's a lot.
The most I've ever seen a show is 3 times. And there was 2. Xanadu and Disaster.
I know, you told me.
Oh, wow.
Truth.
So you saw our friend Jennifer over there.
Yes.
And then we got to do a reading together. When was
it?
August of 2017?
Yeah.
Is that right?
That feels right.
That feels right.
Yeah.
I got to be your mom. I was your mom.
Dying when I heard you were doing it.
Yeah.
I died.
I was dying when I heard you. I was dying when I heard you because I stalked you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's even one of the questions. Like, you were really getting really well known on...
Yeah,
On the cabaret scene, and how, like, that voice. And I was like, oh, my goodness. So I was really excited as well.
Two very talented ladies in the room. What did you do cabaret before, in addition to everything else you've done?
I think it was January 2014 when I did one concert at 54 Below. It was one of those compilation concerts where it was lots of different composers doing, like, a song for something. And I did an Adam Guan number. And I had done a couple of concerts before then, but I hadn't, like, taken off in the circuit. And we were just rehearsing, and I was, you know, mixing it because we're just learning it. And they're like, "Well, it's too pretty. I don't want..." And I was like, "Oh, I'll belt it. You want me? I'll belt it." and it was like, you know, E's and F's. And so it was kind of absurd because everybody's like, da, da, da. And I was like, yeah! But then from I had like two lines, like two little, maybe three bar, you know, moments. But from that concert, there's a bunch of composers that all of a sudden, they were like, who are you? It was a little overwhelming, but then it like took off from there. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing everybody's shows and concerts, and I was about to leave for the Kinky Boots tour, and Jen Tepper was like, you need to do a show here. So then I did my own show before I left, called Belting Bonnie's Bon Voyage.
Wow, did you enjoy it?
I did.
Yeah.
It was something that when I started, like, you know, I was so worried, and then as soon as I started, I was like, oh, I meant to do stuff like this. I like this.
You were that little girl again, right?
Yes.
This feels right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you sing songs you had to learn, or did you sing things that you already sort
I picked
of knew?
A lot of stuff I knew. My MD was Andy Einhorn. He helped me piece the whole thing together because he's like, we got to pick stuff you know, that you love. You get three options of like whatever you want, screw whatever the audience would want, whatever you want, and the rest, like what would a fan of yours want? And he like helped me piece the whole thing together, and it was so fun. Like I sang a lot of stuff that, you know, I loved already, and a lot of... I don't know if I learned anything.
What were the three songs you sang for yourself?
I did a little like a Doris Day. We ended up doing like a little mashup of You Made Me Love You. Mm. And
Church Hop. You did Church Hop.
And I did Church Hop. And my other one, which actually fit into what somebody would want from me, was It's All Coming Back to Me Now, Celine Dion. Mm. But I reversed the meaning, so the thought of it all disgusted her.
Huh.
And then, what was my other one that was like a must? I think it was actually one of the songs that his partner wrote with Dick Scanlon, a song called Wildflowers.
Fabulous.
And
are you a Doris Day fan?
Yes.
So am I.
Love.
Love.
Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me. Anyhow, that's how I feel. Wow, I feel just like a Pollyanna. I should worry, not for nothing. Everybody loves me. Yes, they do. Everybody, since I fell in love with you.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Yeah. What's your favorite Doris Day film? Top two. Okay.
Top two. I love Move Over Darling.
Oh, that's interesting.
I just do.
That's really interesting. Are you a Polly Bergen fan?
She's great. Yes. Yeah. I love Move Over Darling, and I love like the Thelma, all of it. And I mean, there's different categories that the Doris films.
Well,
you know?
So I'm personally a fan of Doris in Peril. So I like the Doris Day movies.
Oh, like
where
Midnight
she,
Lace?
Where, oh my God, I love you. Nobody knows that film.
Man Who Knew Too Much.
Well, yes, those are the two Doris Day and Peril movies.
The Peril
it's a subgenre. Yeah.
Well, to a certain extent, Glass Bottom Boat. I mean, she's a little bit, there's a little bit of stuff in that. Midnight Lace, I think, is one of the greatest bad movies ever made.
Yeah.
I truly feel that way. So if you, it's out there on DVD. I have all these weird, like, South American and Croatian copies of movies that are hard to get.
I used to get my allowance, and I would go on eBay and get like movies of hers. Yeah. And I went on IMDb and I printed out every movie she'd ever done, and I wanted to collect them all.
Oh my gosh.
Because I got like a gift from my mom for I think Mother's Day or her birthday or something. And she talked about Doris Day once. And so I bought her, I want to say it was not Send Me No Flowers. What's her other? The Thrill of It All.
The Thrill of It All.
Another James Garner film.
A fantastic film.
And I got her that VHS. And I watched it and I was like, oh, I love this. And she was so funny. And then I read about her and she has like this amazing story. And she was from Cincinnati, Ohio, and she was going to be a dancer. And they were on their way. She was like 12 and they were going to do like a ballroom dancing competition. And she was with her friends going to the away party. They were going to California and their car got struck by a train and her legs like shattered. And she was told she would never walk again. And she started singing with the radio. And then she became a singer. And then she got into an abusive relationship and all this crazy stuff. And then she was kind of forced into acting because she was so beautiful and she had this beautiful voice. And she was like, her life was falling apart. And she
didn't want to.
Ruined her audition because she was like, I'm a mess. She'd had a child. She'd sent home to Ohio because she was trying to get out of this relationship. And then like fell into movies and became like one of the most celebrated box office draws.
You know your Doris Day.
I'm
impressed. Well, and you know, it's funny because I think she, as you said, she didn't want to be an actor necessarily. It wasn't a lifelong dream. And I think the misleading thing about Doris Day is what an incredible actor she really was.
Incredible actress, yeah.
And I think that's evident in her comedy. Comedy, as you know, because you do comedy very, very well, it's tough.
Yeah.
And I think you get misunderstood as how good you are because it seems so easy. And as you know, the stuff you do in Head Over Heels, it's like you're throwing lines away, but you're not. Not at all.
Thanks.
Anyway, well, thank you for going down Doris Day Lane with me.
I'm
such a big fan. I actually own the complete Doris Day show. Which
I do too.
Do you really? Oh my God.
All five seasons.
We're
yes.
Meant to be. Yes. It's never the same show in any given
season. No, and all of a
sudden
she didn't have kids at the end. Yeah. You're like, what's going on? I've got
it. It's wackadoo. Oh, that's funny. I've actually very few people know Midnight Lace. You've impressed.
I need
me.
To look it up.
Right and off the gate. You're welcome. With Rex Harrison.
Ooh. Rex Harrison
it's
and Myrna Loy.
It's essentially like gaslights her. It's times.
Yeah, she's like someone's trying to kill her. But it's Myrna Loy. It's the beautiful John Gavin. I mean, we should probably leave it there. And
that's just, a different podcast.
Just go find it. Right? Do you want to do the Doris Day podcast with me?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I'm ready.
Okay, all right, now back to you.
That's why you're here.
Wait, but that's a great segue. You just said I'm ready. And I have to say, right before you went into Head Over Heels, I remember one of your social media posts, and at the end of it, you said, I'm ready. And I, from my living room couch, now, you know, I knew you by then, and I mean, my grin went from ear to ear. I was like, yeah, she is. I was just so excited for you. What an amazing, you know, time this has been. And again, I think we'll see you again in the spring if I have anything to say about it.
Yes.
Well, I say kudos to the producers who I think have kept the show open longer than
probably
most producers would have, right?
For sure.
And it's testament to their belief in the material and the way it has resonated with certain audiences who don't always get that representation. As it does sort of wind down, looking back on your three-year journey with the show, what has it taught you?
Oof. Oh, wow. There are things I can't get into. But it has, oh, gosh, I feel like I've learned so much. I've learned to speak up for myself in a lot of ways beyond like for like Bonnie as a human. And it has taught me a lot about trusting myself and my gut and my ability, you know, to think, oh, I have something here to offer, and that's okay to say, and that's okay to believe in.
If people don't know, doing 8 shows a week on Broadway is exhausting.
Oh, my God.
And I'm sure that was a revelation to
fact.
You. Yes.
Fact.
Do you have any plans to heal your body and soul a little bit?
Oh,
coming
yes.
up?
I just came from the doctor's to come to you right now, and it was the first time he didn't order an MRI after. I was very excited.
Great.
Small victories. I'm in therapy for, like, my back, my leg, my feet. My, like, rotator cuff is a mess. My costumes are very heavy. Mm. I think I had this idea that when you do 8 shows a week, you still have, like, your day, and you just have to show up and do this show, and you'll be fine, and wow, like, there's just so much, there's so many other elements, and so much to staying healthy, and physically okay to do the show, which this is a very physical show, an emotionally taxing show, all the things, too.
And you're repeating the same thing every night, so yes. those injuries... have a hard time healing.
Right? Yeah. Like my knees are kind of rough right now. And the doctor, we were talking because I was like, he's going to order MRI on my knee. I feel it, like, because I'm going to have to bring up how much pain I was in yesterday. And but I collapse on my knees at the end of my mat scene,
yes.
you know?
Oh my gosh.
And
number.
It's a mattress, but I'm still putting my whole body down on my knees 8 times a week.
It reminds me of how people always say, like, oh, well, teachers, they have the summer off, you know? It's like actors, they have the day off, right? They just work at night. And it's like, well, you have no idea
all lies. Goes
into, you know, that performance.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Well, what really excites me about Head Over Heels is that it's been announced that it will be licensed for community theater and, you know, high schools and colleges around the country. So I have a feeling we're about to see a bevy of productions.
I hope
Heels.
So.
I imagine people are chomping at the bit. So you have now created this role in Broadway. You will always be the original Princess Pamela.
Yay.
And there's a cast recording, which is so exciting.
They
did that. Do you have any advice for future Princess Pamelas? Maybe wear knee pads or, you know.
Wear knee pads. You know, I would love to see all the different takes on her, you know, just bringing yourself to her. And just, I think you can fall down a hole of being a brat, and I don't think that's Pamela. Mm. I've striven to do a lot for her that's not necessarily on the page. That is making her, you know, you have to listen to her lyrics as her truth. So when she says, you may think I'm crazy, so what if I am? My head is full of good things, enough for everyone. I take that as her truth. So I take that as her, she wants good for everyone. And when she says to her sister, you know, from a boundless love, I have to tell you the truth, like, you're playing. Because her sister just said, I don't need a lot of suitors, I would just like one. And it's like, oh my God, okay, it's time to talk. You have to curl your hair, you'll have to put on some makeup, you'll have to get a better dress, is what she's saying. But you can look it on the page and she's calling her plain, you know. But like, no, she says a boundless love. She loves her, and this is tough love time. So it's like, you gotta fix this if you want anyone. Look at me. And look at you.
Well,
and
your
I
contact
have more
is
to work
oppressive,
with.
Right? Yeah.
I have an oppressive context. I have to keep up with the standards because I'm gorgeous. And you have to try harder. So it's taking that as, like, not making her some superficial brat, but someone who's really awful tactics, who really cares about... It's like, you know, that the trickiness of, like, why people love, like, Karen Walker on Will and Grace. You know, that there's got to be some heart underneath all these, like, heinous things she says. So that would be my piece of advice, is, like, don't fall down the... You have to find ways to, like, she's saying things, but with, like, such love, or just doesn't understand.
So sincere.
It's so... You have to be so sincere. Super sincere, because no one will care about her. I think that's another thing I've, like, learned, is, like, to embrace my beauty and, you know... Not apologize for, like, myself or taking up space or, like, trying to, like, explain why I'm somewhere, which is so much of the scripts and everything I receive, which is something hard to get out of your head when you're given that all the time. Like, you're like, no, just stand tall and and proud and beauty, the days that I've felt really bad about myself and I have to find the self-love to get on stage and sing about how pretty I am as kind of healing, which is nice.
Is there something you would want to teach Pamela if you could?
I mean, tact, but she, no, but it's lovable, so.
She wouldn't be Pamela, come on. See, that's what I like about her. She just says it like it is,
true.
Which I think is, maybe I don't have tact either, so maybe that's why I respond to her.
You're a Pamela.
No, I love her. I love the arc that she takes of, like, learning to take in, you know, to, like, truly loving people in a different, more productive way than she believes she is doing. That's nice. That's
yeah, good. She does actually grow.
She does.
She does. They all do, which is nice.
Yeah. That line at the end, actually, like, to draw a circle, one must end where one begins. And who resembles any of the fools that began on the journey? No one is the answer.
And on that note, I think we leave it there.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Rob here with You May Be Wondering. Head Over Heels closes January 6th after 188 performances on Broadway. The show will be long remembered, though, for making history. I alluded to it a little bit, but just in case you missed it, you might be wondering, how? Well, believe it or not, Head Over Heels was the first Broadway show to feature a principal role played by a performer who identifies as a trans woman. Peppermint, the runner-up of RuPaul's Drag Race's 9th season, plays Pythio the Oracle, a self-described non-binary plural who goes by the pronoun they. Indeed, much of the story centers around its characters exploring their gender and sexuality to live as their authentic selves. Not to steal Peppermint's thunder, but celebrated trans activist and performer Justin Vivian Bond, who uses the pronoun V, can actually hold claim to being the first actor who identifies as transgender to play a trans character on a Broadway stage. That's because V starred as Anna Madrigal in a one-night-only benefit concert of the musical adaptation of Aubusted Maupin's Tales of the City in March 2017. I was fortunate to be in the audience that night and to witness that important slice of history. Peppermint is the first trans performer, though, to play a trans role for an open-ended run. People often muse that you know you've made progress when something that was once noteworthy becomes matter of fact. Like, for example, the idea of a woman running for president. We'll likely have several running in 2020. Mere months after Peppermint's debut, Alexandra Billings, whom you may know from the TV show Transparent, played the irreverently named transgender mafioso Waxy Bush in Richard Bean's comedy The Nap. Seemingly overnight, Broadway went from zero representation of trans people on stage to two principal characters in two separate shows. Meanwhile, off-Broadway, in plot points in our sexual development at Lincoln Center Theater's LCT3 program, Jax Jackson, a trans woman, played Theo, a, quote, trans-masculine, genderqueer person who is not a woman and is not a man, but is kind of a man, who loves lesbian jokes, end quote. And I'm sure there are tons of other examples I could cite. That's because more and more trans and non-binary actors are getting the opportunity to play trans and non-binary characters on stage, as both of these communities increasingly become part of the scene fabric of American society. Diversity in the theater means creating more opportunities for theater makers of every race, gender identity, age, ability, and body type. As we say goodbye to Head Over Heels, let's make sure we always remember the milestones it marked.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.